It's Christmas! Are you hanging up your stocking? You all? This is for the fans, by the fans. This is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with a weekly look at the world of non-league football. This week we talk to an old friend of the show on his new job alongside his best mate and joint manager. It's a welcome back to Anthony Jono Johnson in his new role at Spennymoor Town. Lots of miles to be clocked up, but with a win in the FA Trophy already notched, he's positive the club is heading in the right direction both on and off the field. As COVID, it also hovers above the non-league calendar, forcing many games off. He also recalls with regret his time spent in hospital earlier this season when he avoided his vaccination jab. With Christmas local derbies, the stuff of legend, we speak to a manager who's sitting second in the table and welcomes his old side who sit above them. A home win would swap the positions too. It's the big Derbyshire derby on the 27th of December. Matlock Town against Buxton. You surely couldn't get more derby than that. Matlock boss Paul Phillips also talks about the ambition of the club. 143 years in existence and currently as high as they have ever been. Plus, why do goalkeepers make great managers? Rounding off this week's news is David Richardson, senior writer at the Non-League Paper. And we talk about the impact of COVID on the Christmas programme. And further ahead, we talk about an old face in a new role and what we can expect to read in the Christmas issue of this weekend's non-league paper. Much to come. Sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. I think we already established in that introduction, it is Christmas time. And as we settle down to a comfortable Christmas at home, our next guest is, well, he's probably working out the quickest route across the country, not to visit family, but to organise his new set of lads. It's a warm welcome back to the Non-League Football Show to new joint manager at Spennymoor Town, Anthony Johnson. Welcome back, Jono.
Hey, buddy.
A new job just in time for Christmas. Didn't you fancy having a Christmas at home for once?
No, I had about a week at home with the wife and kids, and that was enough for me, Tim. Ready to go back to work, me and Bernie. He was on the phone every minute, every day. Saying, fine, there's a job, fine, there's a job. So, look, we wanted to get straight back in. Our age and with what we've gone through over the last couple of years in terms of constant lockdowns and stuff, we feel fresh, we feel energised, and we just felt ready to go again. And that's, I suppose, when you feel like that, you've got a chance around anything that comes up.
Yeah, and this, I've spoken. You're already in the car there. You're on the road. You've got some travel in this one. It's only like 2 hours or so from home. Is that doable every day? Or I'm thinking maybe there's a new documentary where you and Bernard share a motorhome and park in the club car park.
What, Max and Paddy? to be honest with you, I mean, my previous job years back I was a wagon driver anyway, so to say I'd love driving is probably stretching it a little bit, but it's never bothered me in the slightest. It's not, to be fair, it's not took us 2 hours yet, either going there or back. I think it used to be about an hour and 15 to Chester, depending if you hit the traffic at the wrong time. And it's not been too much more going to Spennymoor. I think it's more the mileage thing. People look at it, they look at a map, and they think it's a lot further than what it is. But actually, once you get past Leeds and onto the A1M North, it's a bit of a doddle. So, And I think the important thing for me and Bern, we sat down and talked about it before we went up there to meet the owner and be interviewed, was it was a fresh challenge. It was us coming out of our comfort zone, obviously being at Ramsbottom and Salford and Chester all within, as I say, an hour from where we lived. It was, I wouldn't say it was dead easy, because football management isn't easy, as we found out at Chester at the back end. But it was, you know, all the players, you know, it works. We wanted to step out that little bit. We wanted to try something different. We've had different types of football clubs that we've managed since we started, in terms of being fan-owned, in terms of being who the owners were at Salford, in terms of being a small village club at Chester, and coming out of our comfort zone and travelling up to the northeast to take charge of a club with the ambition that it's got, ticked all the boxes at the right time, to be fair.
Yeah, and we've spoken about that joint manager relationship, or also that best mate relationship that you and Bernard have got there. Your two families are very close too, so this is a big move with big dreams. Was it a group decision, or was it just you and Bernard just sort of came up with this idea?
No, it's always a group decision. It's always based on families. You know, Bern's family and mine come watching the games. You know how it impacts families anyway, any level of football, in terms of wives and children's mums and dads, that type of stuff. So, one of the most important things, obviously, after me and Bern make the decision, is that our families are happy with what we're doing and where we're going. As I said to you, when we went up there and we was blown away by the owner's ambitions of what the football club, we relayed that back to the family members. And I'll be honest with you, it became a no-brainer. It was something, as soon as we met Brad Groves, the owner up there, that it was something that we wanted to be part of. So it didn't take too much convincing or too much thinking about, to be honest. Obviously, we're unemployed. We've come out of a job that we've been involved with for 3.5 years, and you want something new, but it has to be the right thing. You know, I think the one thing we did say when we initially came out of Chester was we didn't want to jump into something two-footed and sort of regret that. So we had a few phone calls, different types of clubs at different levels in different countries, believe it or not. So when this one came up, it ticked every box that we'd sort of written down and decided what we needed to tick.
Yeah, and I understand it was you guys that made the first approach, or just sort of made them aware that you were you might be interested. And I guess if there's any doubt of the desire, the commitment, you know, we talk about the travel and the time commitments and that. You know, both parties we know are really ambitious, but it's great that those you've met. It's a meeting of minds as well. There's the plans for both you and Bernard and the club and the strategy all seem to have come together at the perfect timing.
Yeah, everything has to align. And obviously, we've been up against Jason Ainsley over the last few years, who's come through the leagues. We've spent a while as we've come up with Salford, Rami and Chester. So we've known Jason quite a long time. Fantastic fella. He's the head of operations at the football club. And we, as soon as obviously the job came up, it's never nice. You know, me and Bern have never acted like the Grim Reaper sat in a stand behind the previous manager. We don't believe in that. Obviously, as soon as it was announced that he'd left his role, Tommy had left his role, we made contact with Jason the day after, said we'd be up for having a chat and an interview if that was something they were looking to do. We went up 48 hours later, up to meet, as I said, the owner and his managing director, Tony. And within a few hours, we knew it was the right one for us, and it was a case of us sort of not showing to be too overexcited in case it obviously didn't come to fruition. But within a few days, they made the call and asked us if we'd fancy the job. But as you said, everything had to align. You know, it's all right saying I'm ambitious and we want to get to this and we want to do that. And we're massive believers in what you're doing to do that. It's all, we can all throw words out there, platitudes all over the place about what we want to do, where we want to get to, but has to be a real strategy in place to ensure that you're pointing in the right direction. And to be fair, you know, obviously Salford had that and have shown how they've done it in terms of their spending power, but spending more is totally different. You know, you only have to look at their average attendance this season, which is actually above the likes of Chester and Darlington, ex-league clubs, to show that as a football club and in the community that they're building. So he can sit there all he wants and say, we want to be here in this amount of time. When he shows you the sort of blueprint of how he's going to do it and how he's going to get it there, you know, you could see it's going to happen. And we wanted to be part of that. We wanted to be the managers that took him up there.
Yeah, and you mentioned about Tommy Miller departing earlier this month. He'd been in the role there only 7 months, but before that, he was assistant to Jason Ainsley for, I think, nearly 5 years, if not longer. And that's a long time under the same philosophy. You say you sort of obviously know Jason and spoke to him. Is your philosophy much different on the field? And if so, does that change have to be gradual or swift?
I think we're all very pragmatic in our approach in terms of on the field stuff and the style of play. We made massive changes and strides when we was at Chester in terms of that, in terms of our on-field performances and style of play. At this moment in time, Spenny Moore have obviously been in a rut, and what happens is, a bit like we were at Chester, the manager's the one who pays the price. Tommy had been with Jason for, as you said, 5 or 6 seasons, and sometimes what happens in the change room is the same voice can become a little bit repetitive and become stale. And I think they just wanted a fresh approach. You know, everyone knows what me and Bern are about as people and as managers. And I think that's what they were looking for. They were looking for someone to come in with fresh ideas, a fresh voice, someone probably from outside the area, obviously, which is what we are, so that you're not going to the same well all the time, hoping to bring the same players back into the same group. It needed that bit of a shock tactic in terms of training, the intensity that we bring, but also a freshness in terms of new faces, new ideas, and a new voice or new voices. So me, Bern, Steve took up the offer and have gone up there. But we've kept, you know, the rest of the people around us. You know, we don't believe in change for change's sake. Obviously, the previous manager and the assistant left the football club, but everything else has remained in place, and we've come in there just to try and change the culture slightly of what the reasons that people come into the football club are, and for coming for the right reasons, like we've done.
Yeah, and I mean, you guys you came in fairly young into management. You've had, you know, three great clubs and success, and well, I guess your own share a disappointment as well. You've learnt a lot, I'd imagine. But you say about the new restructure there at Spennymoor in the summer. What one thing excites you most about the club and the opportunity there?
That everyone's pulling in the same direction and that everything's pointing in the same direction. The people that you meet at the football club, I talked about the alignment of mine and Bernard's ambitions and the club's. Every single person at football club, whether it be the managing director, whether it be the head of operations, whether it be the media guys, whether it be the kit man, the secretary, absolutely everybody is under no illusions of what the owner wants. And when you get that feeling, that feeling of people wanting to win, of being the best, just small little details that you see around the place that we've not had at previous clubs and stuff that you've always wanted to implement at previous clubs that you've not been able to do is already there. And I think the big thing and the best thing for me and Burn is that we've always been massive believers in a no-excuse culture, and that's exactly what we walked into at Spennymoor. Everything is provided in terms of for players, you know, whether it be a physio, whether it be sports therapist, whether it be fitness coaches, everything, you know, on-site gym, everything is there for players. It eliminates excuse. If we get beat and our performance is bad, we can look at ourselves in the mirror and go, right, we've done something wrong here, rather than being able to walk off the coach and say, this wasn't right and that wasn't right. And I think the best thing about it all is that the owner, the people at the top of the football club have made sure that there's nobody can walk out of that door and say, right, well, that wasn't done properly. And that's exactly what you want when you've got a football club saying they want to get to a certain place in the football standings, in the pyramid. You want to be able to have the right tools that can take you to where you need to be.
And talking of those right tools, I love the fact that you always include Bernard in our conversations we have together. And I don't want him to think that I'm leaving him out. It's always me and you that speak. But I watched the club video interview when you were first signed for the club, and I'm now wondering whether you guys have some sort of branding consultant, because you're both wearing black jackets. One's in a white t-shirt, one's in a black t-shirt. You got Bernard to your right, so on camera it is the Bernard and Jono show. Now, it seems to me that you've moved to the northeast and you're more Ant and Dec than Ant and Dec are.
Yeah, we have to have our own little show. The thing is, Bern doesn't like the interview side of things. He's very much a practical person, you know, loves the training ground stuff. He does what he needs to do, but he leaves it to me. He knows I can talk for England. He switches the back of my neck where he thinks there's a power button, so I switch off sometimes. But when you've been as close as we have since we've been 10, 11 year old, you know, we've played at various kids together through the School of Excellence, me being a year up. We currently live about a mile away from each other. Our daughters were born within 2 weeks of each other. Our, you know, wives are friends. Our dads are friends. It's just one of them connections. You know, you've seen it. God knows how many times joint managers try to work and it doesn't happen. But we know that, you know, as an example, when I was poorly back in the summer, it didn't matter how long I was away, because the implicit trust we have with each other is that we work in each other's best interests. There's no hidden agendas. And that's not to say that happens with other joint managers. I think it's at Slough, the two fellas at Slough that are joint managers as well, have had a brilliant success. But it comes from implicit trust. You know, none of us are trying to do anything on our own. None of us want a job on our own. And whether that be, you know, almost second guessing each other what we're thinking in terms of our dress sense and stuff like that, I don't know. But I can assure you, Tim, I don't pick up the phone and say, what are you wearing today? I'm going to put the same clothes as you on. It just, sometimes I think when you've hung around with each other for so long and you're that tight, you're almost thinking, you know, the same thoughts. And I think that's why it works for us, or that's why it's definitely worked in the past for us, is because, you know, I talked about it being before about the club and me and Bern about being aligned. I think me and Bern are exactly, you know, the same thing. Yeah. They often get asked, would you do the job on your own? I'd rather be out of the game than doing it. You know, with what we've been through over the last 6 months, you know, outside of football and in football, I often look and think, how could a manager on his own go through that type of stuff, you know, we've had to go through? But that's why it works, you know, implicit trust and always believing in each other.
Yeah, I mean, we've already seen a number of games pulled due to COVID, and I fear other games over the Christmas period may fall as well, with or without government intervention. And you touched on it there, you obviously had your own COVID battle earlier this year. You were hospitalised in pre-season, basically, weren't you? And for those that may be not yet fully jabbed, have you got any message to them?
Don't be stupid. That was exactly what I was. I was daft. You know, it wasn't that I didn't believe in the vaccines, but I just didn't find time for it. And obviously, and I'll be honest, at times I still feel like I've got the after effects of it now. You know, nobody knows we'll know for a few years what the lasting effects are of the virus. But I was an idiot, you know. My wife tells me daily. But I've had the two jabs now, and I'm due in this week or next week, sorry, for the booster, which I can now have with a time frame. And it's just a case of keeping everybody safe around. You know, I've lived it. I've been through it. I didn't believe it could happen to me. I was out of football for a month, best part of a month. And I missed the last two games at Chester. I actually missed as well because of illness and how it's kept affecting me. So it doesn't know how big or how strong or how cocky or arrogant you are as a person. It's not a virus that discriminates against anybody. You know, it's if you're not jabbed and looked after, then it's gonna cause you a problem. And I can only ever tell my story, Tim. It's not for me to tell people to have the jab. I can only tell them what I went through. And I've said this about a thousand times. I'd pay any amount of money.
Am I right as well that was the second time you'd had COVID, because you'd had it before as well?
Yeah, yeah. That's the reason I'm an idiot, because I had it the first time 13, 14 months ago. And, you know, you hear people. It felt like a bad case of flu, essentially, the first time. But obviously this next variant, this Delta variant, got me in the summer, and I was lucky, you know, I got told I had a day or two to live if my kidneys hadn't picked up. So I'm lucky to be still talking to you now. But I've gone through everything that I need to get through, and fingers crossed, you know, it doesn't affect me or anybody, you know, anybody I know or close to me, or anybody else for that matter, doesn't have to go through what I did. Naturally, that happens, and there's unfortunately people around Christmas now lying in hospital beds with this latest variant. But all I can do is tell my story and implore people not to.
Well,
not to be.
That's it. We can't insist that people go and get these jabs or anything like that. But it's a bit like saying to them, don't go out on Friday night and have 18 pints and smoke 20 decks of fags. It's, you know, there's an opportunity there to maybe help yourself. And but yeah, we're just grateful that we've got you. I'm sure your missus is as well, despite the flack that she may give you. Let's talk about football, because we've got the Christmas program in front of us. You've spoken about how when you've been at other clubs, you've engaged with the fans, because you know how important working with them is. A great way to win fans over is to win in a local derby, and Darlington, your visitors on Boxing Day, it's all teed up.
Yeah, massive games. Listen, it's the best time of year for football. You know, obviously, you said it before that the likelihood of games being called off through COVID and maybe even the weather, which is awful, because this is the best time of year. You know, two, three games in the space of a week at our level of football, always derby games, Darlow twice and Blyth away. The proper games of football. When you look at Darlow and Spennymoor, they've come up the leagues together since, obviously, Darlow, you know, folded from being a football league side and starting again. They both come through together. Me and Bernard, you know, in battles with Darlow at Ramy, Salford, and then Chester, you know, has the makings for a real proper rivalry. This two sides similar in the league table, similar points away from the playoffs, and knowing that if you can pick 6 points up over the Christmas period against each other, not only are you getting closer to the playoffs, but you're pulling yourself away further from your rivals. So you bang on. That's it. You can be the nicest fellow in the world and get all the supporters in the world, but if you're not winning games of football, then ultimately, you know, as we've seen with us at Chester and Tommy at Spennymoor, then you pay with your job. So it's about hitting the ground running. We had a good win last week, a decent win last night in the local county cup, beating Gateshead's young players, younger team. And we're trying to create that momentum now and trying to create that that identity that Spennymoor have had for the last 10 years of winning, winning, winning. And that comes from these games coming up now fast. Every 2 days, getting points on the board.
Because you've got a game, you've got this Darlington game on the 26th, haven't you? Then the 28th, you've got another derby, Blyth Spartans, and then Darlington again on New Year's Day. That's asking a lot of the players, as well as you guys.
Yeah, but if you ask any footballer, that's what they want. You know, they'd much rather. You've heard it over the last few years. Players would much rather play than train. Obviously, it's the time of year where you've got Christmas, what they're eating, you think about the nutrition side of things, parties and all that type of stuff. You know, obviously, with what's going around in terms of COVID, lads, you'd like to think are professional enough to up and down the country and up and down the leagues to look after themselves, because no player in this day and age can eat the wrong things, drink the wrong things and expect to put in a good performance 24 hours later. It doesn't work. So you're almost hoping that lads do the right stuff, because you're not going to see them in between games, essentially. You know, playing on Boxing Day, which is Sunday, and then playing on the Tuesday, we don't get to come back in and train to check how the lads are doing. So it's just, a lot of it's based on trust. And that's why I talked about the momentum side of things. Getting wins will invariably lead to more wins. And it's the same with losses. You know, it becomes a habit. So if we can get that first good result on Boxing Day, it naturally takes you into Tuesday. Lads will be champing at a bit. And then you've got a game next weekend again.
Yeah, well, an old business colleague, no longer with us, used to talk about the relationship of trust, and that's how you build success. And it certainly sounds like that fits in with your philosophy, John. I'll leave you to get back on the road and go and enjoy your Christmas program, and hopefully a bit of time with family as well. But great to get you back on the non-league show, and hopefully we'll speak to you again very soon.
Top man, Tim. Have a good Christmas, pal.
Now, we've already mentioned Christmas derbies, and our next guest has a mouth-watering one ahead of him on Monday the 27th of December. His Matlock Town side are currently second in the Northern Premier League and entertain current top side Buxton in the local derby. A win for Matlock takes them top, and our next guest even used to manage Buxton. It's one of those that Hollywood wishes it had written. Let's find out more, and welcome to the Non-League Football Show. Manager at Matlock Town, Mr. Paul Phillips. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you, my friend.
Well, let's talk about this game first. I mentioned you previously managed at Buxton. You actually took them all the way to the playoffs, as you had done with Ashton too. Christmas is all about love to all men, but I imagine there's going to be some banter from the visiting supporters towards you.
Yeah, there'll be banter. Hopefully a little respectful banter, because, again, I've got a lot of respect for that football club. Never a bad word to say about it, but come the 27th, it's about Matlock Town making sure that we hopefully get the 3 points and that we win a local derby and get the bragging rights as well.
Yeah, and equally, I'm guessing that when you first arrived, a successful manager from a local rival doesn't always get the easiest of rides in a new job either. I mean, how was that?
It was hard at first, to be honest with you, because there was a lot of animosity towards what we was doing, who was bringing in. Obviously, we was at the wrong end of the table. But obviously, with a little bit of success and obviously the vision that we've brought, and obviously a little bit of an upturn in form, and at the moment in time, obviously, things are sort of forgotten about. As is football, it's a very fickle industry, but at the moment, it's going good. But at the time when I first came in, obviously, there was a lot of a few comments, let's say, that much, what we were doing, how we were doing things. So, but hopefully, we've won them back over.
Yeah, well, you can't please everybody all of the time, have you? And
no, that's the problem.
You were one of those managers who came into a new club just before COVID was even being talked about in non-league, really. January 2020, the club were, I think you were 19th in the table when you came in. You say about that change in form. Against the odds, you know, with COVID and everything against you've built a squad, and now halfway through the season, with 21 games played, you're pushing for promotion. I mean, is that as good as you could have expected?
Well, to be honest, and a lot of people, whenever I've gone into a football club, whether it was Ashton, any other clubs that I've gone into, I've always aimed for the top. Obviously, with a different circumstance, everyone's had to sort of ride out. It's been a lot more testing. But listen, I can't take it. The lads have got a lot to answer for on that front. They've been fantastic. The lads that I've brought in, we've got a good group. I've brought them together, and my staff keep them ticking over. And to be fair, the amount of football we've lost over the last 2 years, it's credit to them that they've kept the appetite and the willingness to do what they did and stay fit and push themselves forward. So I can't take a lot of credit for it myself. Obviously, the lads have really brought the club back on the front foot.
But you've obviously made a big impression, you know, both on and off the field. You were given a contract in the summer by the chairman, and it's great to get that back in. But it's a two-way street as well, isn't it? It's you know, what, 45 years since the club's high point of the FA Cup third round and the FA Trophy final win just before that. Is the club now ready for the next chapter of success?
I hope so. Listen, we've come a long way forward. Brin's obviously took over. There's a lot of good people involved. We're doing a lot of good things off the pitch. So I'm hoping now that we've got all the attributes to push on and play in a higher league. Obviously, first and foremost, we've got to earn that right. So for me, it's a matter of keeping doing what we're doing. I don't want people to sort of get in front of themselves just because we're the top or second come Christmas. I think we've got to keep our feet to the floor and then obviously take as it comes. But obviously, going back to the game on the 27th, it's a massive match in that title race, because I think it's obviously Buxton are massive hitters in this league, got really big financial clout, as a South Shields. So really it's testament to the club and the lads that we're still clinging on to the coattails, and at the moment in time we're in front of South Shields. So I would have took that first and foremost when the season started.
And you know, just mentioning those names, it shows how tough this division is, isn't it? I mean, every game is a battle.
Yeah, 100%. It's a really, really hard league, physically and mentally. There's a lot of good footballing teams. There's a lot of teams that mix it up, including ourselves, that the physical side of the game, you get asked a lot of questions. And I think you've got to also have that side to you. And it's a really, really tough league. I don't think there's many tougher leagues out there. And a lot of teams have, and no disrespect to the Southern League, we played Rushall. I think Buxton played Rushall. Radcliffe played Tamworth the other week. And again, I don't want to sound disrespectful to that league, but we've all beaten quite comfortably in that games. I know it's only a one-off game, that, but I think the standing in our league is very, very high. And I think a lot of teams, and at the moment in time, you did go up to the Conference North, themselves, Buxton, South Shields, Warrington, the other teams that are in and around it. I think there won't be too many personnel changes, because I think they've got that many good players who could sort of hold their own in that league.
And I think you showed that last week, didn't you? You came so close last weekend with defeating, well, injury time in the trophy against York City. Obviously, disappointment, but there must be much pride in, especially putting in a performance like that in front of over 800 fans.
Yeah, it was disappointing. It was a bit of a obviously a reality check, because I thought for 60%, 70% of the game we were the better team, but we didn't score the goals that took the tie away, and then you sort of got hit by the sucker punch in the 89th minute. But obviously they've got a lot of good players, fair play to them, they stuck in the game. We had one or two players out, we had three goalkeepers injured at the time, and a couple of other injuries. But again, I'm not going to make that excuse that we didn't have enough. We had a lot of the game. I think we should have won it. I think on the level of play, we could have won it, but we didn't do, and it comes back to bite. And as I said to the lads at the end of the game, that's the difference between our league, a bit more cutthroat than the league above. We won't get as many chances against them teams. So it's a bit of a reality check on that front. But again, we was proud how the lads conducted themselves.
Yeah. Great game then last week. You got this big game on the 27th. You mentioned that the chairman, Bryn, there. The club's been going, I think, nearly 143 years or even more than that, and it's never played higher than this level. Can you feel the expectation? Is there a buzz around the club as to where the club may go next?
Yeah, I think there's a massive buzz at the moment in time, and it should be. Obviously, a lot of hard work going in. The crowds, I think they're up 25-28%, so that's a massive plus. But I think we've got to try and keep that. I think we've got to keep generating that and keep people on board with us, because they're going to be a massive part in what we do if we achieve our goal of getting out of this league. And the people behind the scenes and ourselves are really appreciative of what the, obviously the spectators are bringing. Like I say, 800 last week. We're expecting 1,500 on the 27th, everything being in line. So again, it's massive for the town, and it shows what kind of support we can attract in when the things are going really well.
Yeah, and you're trying to share the praise as well across the squad and everybody involved there. Now, my usual co-presenter is Dave Anderson, formerly of AFC Wimbledon, FA Vars, winning manager with Chertsey Town. He's back coaching the keepers down at Barnet now, so having a bit of sabbatical from this show. But we still chat, and we often chat about why goalkeepers make the best managers. Now, I think you yourself were a keeper. Is that something you agree with? It's like you have a better understanding, a vision of and yeah. Normally the goalkeepers are the crazy ones as well amongst the squad.
Yeah, I think it's the kicks in the head that we get across our career that makes us the best. No, listen, I think obviously, especially the goalkeepers nowadays. I was an outfield player first and foremost, and unfortunately, I got that many yellow and red cards. They put me in net to try and calm me down, and it paid off. But for me, I think it's a big trait. If you look at a lot of keepers at the moment in time who come in managers, it's a hard one to put your finger on. But I think if you've played the game and watched the game, obviously it's a goalkeeping position. You're always behind the game and obviously studying the game from behind the back four, and you've got the perfect view. So that might be some kind of insight into why they make good managers. But I ain't really got the answer to that one. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, another thing that we often say, maybe goalkeepers, they're normally the mouthy ones or the louder ones amongst us. So maybe they're just used to people not listening to them. So they just carry on as a manager.
That's definitely. Listen, I always said I was never the biggest. I'm only 5'11", so everyone always used to say you're not the biggest, but your gob's big enough anyway. So I was always the loudest. And that's the way I like goalkeepers, to be a bit mad, a bit loud, and keeping people on the toes in front of them.
Indeed.
These dozy centre arse, making sure they're not dropping any clangers.
Yeah, staying switched on for the full 90. Now, back to the game on Monday. Now, it's not just you with the former Buxton connections, but a number of players too. And I guess, you know, there's probably many friends across the rivalry too. And that's the magic of why we love these Christmas fixtures.
Yeah, definitely. Like I say, I still sometimes go to, I'm a Man United fan, so unfortunately at the moment in time, but I still go to, sometimes the chairman at Buxton takes me to Old Trafford and we still talk quite a lot. I've got a lot of friends still there, lads that I took into the club that are still there. So it all spices it up for the 27th, and there's a few of my lads who are playing for me now, obviously, that took with me from Buxton. So there's a lot of things that, hopefully it's turned out to be a really good spectacle and one that's a really good spectacle for the spectators.
Mm. And we speak week in, week out about the modern day non-league footballer that they've got to be committed to their fitness. But you've got no weekend game because Saturday's Christmas Day. Your game's on the Monday. That's, well, at least 2 days of potential temptation of excess. it's over a week since you would have had a game. Have you had them in for extra training? Have you given them extra instructions? Or I think, you know, probably from the start of this conversation, I guess you probably just got a lot of trust in them.
Definitely, I think you've got to. I always tell a joke that I'm going to bring a breath test kit on after bank holidays or on a Boxing Day. But no, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think it's got to be a massive amount of trust. You know how big the game is. I think it's great. It's not ideal, obviously. It's always pretty traditional that you play on Boxing Day, but for the lads, at least they can enjoy a couple of drinks on Christmas Day, and then recover on the Boxing Day, ready for the 27th, as long as they don't go overindulge. But it's a trust element. It's a trust element, and I trust my lads. I think they'll conduct themselves right, and then obviously I'll know that come quarter to five on the 27th, but I'm pretty sure they know what we expect of them, and the standards at our club are top draw.
And long may they continue. Paul, yes. We wish you a great Christmas. Wish you luck on the 27th, and thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Thank you, and all the best to everyone as well. All the best to Christmas, mate.
So rounding off this week's news, it's time once again to head on over to Non-League Paper Towns. And welcome back to the Non-League Football Show to senior writer at the Non-League Paper, Mr. David Richardson. Welcome back, David.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Good. Yeah, in that Christmas spirit. But I don't know. Maybe I need a sugar rush or something like that. At the start of the week, we had the FA Trophy draw. 32 ties for that second weekend in January. A nice spread of clubs, which mean that the National League aren't going to have it all their own way. So could we have another Hornchurch this season?
Yeah, quite possibly. It's you suddenly feel like when Hornchurch won that, you kind of feel like, oh, actually, you know, it's possible for a team below the sort of National League to win the trophy. And, you know, you do sort of get that feel again this season. Obviously, you've got a couple of Step 4 teams in there. Plymouth Parkway, who'll be going all the way up to Spennymoor, which is about a 700-mile round trip for that tie. But, you know, nonetheless, I'll be looking forward to it. And also, Larkhall going to Stockport as well. Obviously, you know, one of the National League's big clubs. So, two sort of interesting ties for them there. You know, obviously very difficult, but Plymouth Fireway have beaten Dulwich and Hampton and Richmond from Step 2 in the previous two rounds. So, you know, no reason why they can't win that one again against Spennymoor from National League North. But, yeah, very much trophy game still sort of alive for clubs across the pyramid.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll get there. Obviously, the COVID situation, both within football and the nation as a whole, it might affect the Christmas calendar. Yeah, fingers crossed it won't. We've already lost two, I believe, for Boxing Day. at the time that we're speaking in the National League, Borehamwood, Barnet and Halifax and Grimsby, I fear a few may fall between now and then, particularly with a lot of games. We spoke to Anthony Johnson up there at Spennymoor already this week. They've got games on the 26th, the 28th and the 1st. There's a lot of games together. And I just hope that doesn't mean that the virus will spread quicker across non-league than it maybe would have done with a slightly less compacted calendar.
Yeah, it's certainly a busy time this Christmas period, like it always is. Obviously, that's kind of the big talking point in the Premier League at the moment, really, the mixture of these games in quick succession and also COVID as well, and stretched squads and players missing through injury and obviously through COVID as well. So yeah, it will be a real test for non-league clubs across this next 7 days or so. But you know, it's always sort of slightly funny when you sort of hear Premier League clubs complaining about not having players available in the fixture pile-up when non-league players who are only part-time, have jobs in between as well, are turning out several times over this period. So there you go. But I'm sure where games can be played, they will be played, and fans will turn out in their numbers like they always do over Christmas, and the players and clubs will give their best.
Yeah, I'm sure there's many of us that would willingly swap places with a Premier League star. Just the 1 week, I'm sure, would help all our bank balances completely. And we don't want anybody overworking. But as you say, the comparison with non-league shows that if you've got a true passion and desire for football, you'll turn out day after day. And speak to managers who are week in, week out, who just talk about their players' passion to want to play and play as many games as possible. And also play in front of fans. You mentioned the fans there. There's going to be impact with the current situation on certain clubs more than others. Merthyr Town in the Southern South, they took that sabbatical last season due to the country's differing rules between Wales and England to sort of try and help the league, really, help themselves as a club to survive. And now they find themselves having to play games behind closed doors because of the government recommendations in Wales. So I think that the first game is the 27th, Merthyr against Yate, is going to have to be played behind closed doors, which is it's never a good sign for any clubs at non-league, but particularly someone at step three, a club that is struggling already. I do hope that there's going to be some sort of help for them to keep going, because we know that Merthyr have had their difficult times in the past already.
Yeah, obviously the news from Wales and Scotland this week about restricted crowds, or obviously like you say in Wales's case, no crowds, is quite worrying for what you think might be coming towards the English pyramid now. And obviously, as we know from the last season gone by, non-league clubs can't play behind closed doors without any sort of financial help with that. Obviously, the National League and Step 1 and Step 2 did that, but even Step 2 was shut down eventually. And obviously, of course, step three and below didn't finish either. So, yeah, you sort of feel like when you see other countries doing that, it's going to head the same way here, really, which is a shame. Obviously, it hasn't yet, but it does sort of sound like we're on the brink of new restrictions coming in. And like you say, obviously, that's not an ideal situation at all for clubs. And of course, leagues, you have to then try and navigate the fixture pile up from the games that will obviously be postponed. And the bigger picture, of course, of trying to finish the season in a normal way with promotion and relegation, which obviously hasn't happened at steps three and four in the last couple of seasons. So yeah, we're sort of back to the bleak sort of old times about sort of a year ago, really, when this was all ramping up. Or, I think we're maybe a little bit behind it at this stage now, but, it seems to be sort of heading that way. But hopefully, if there is any sort of suspension to play, it'll only be for a few weeks and things can get going again. But it will all hinge on fans being allowed into grounds, and how many fans being allowed into grounds. You know, even if it's capped at 500 for some clubs, as we know, at steps 3 and 4, you know, they get more crowd, more, you know, they get double that into the thousands. So yeah, we're sort of waiting for what I feel like is almost the inevitable, really. But you know, fingers crossed it won't happen. But it's, you know, with case rates rising in the country every day, it sort of seems like, yeah, it's only a matter of time, to be honest.
Yeah, and you know, it is a bit bleak, and as you say, you know, it maybe we want to need a fire break or some sort of thing. But I think looking back to this time last year where we were, I think non-league and the world has learned so much as well in this last year, and there's solutions out there. So if football did have to stop for a brief while, I don't think that we'd see the whole season finished. Obviously, there's a million and one things that could change, and I could come to eat my words in a few days' time, even. But elsewhere in the Eastern Counties League, I see they've pulled all of their games for the 27th after they asked their member clubs for their viewpoint. So there's obviously the clubs out there worried, and I think I raised this last week, that it's not just the players on the field, it's the people, the volunteers off the field as well, that we have to consider, you know, and make sure that we've got enough of them off the field, really, to make sure that we can put these games on safely. I think that's a big thing. And you know, one other big impact for non-league is going to be this lack of replays in the FA Cup third and fourth round. We've already spoken about the lack of live games for the non-league contingent already in the third round, but now there isn't even that extended dream of maybe getting a TV with a replay.
Yeah, that is a shame. You wonder, you know, how that sort of might factor into teams' approaches. You know, they may say that, well, maybe we'll have a better chance of getting to the fourth round if we're just playing one game. But you know, at the same time, if you get a replay, it's a whole load more money coming in. So you almost have to decide which one you may want in some cases. But yeah, that's another blow. Obviously, I can understand why they've done it. And, you know, ultimately, it'll be that sort of decision is largely sort of dictated by the top flight clubs, really, who, you know, won't be wanting these replays being played. But yeah, it's a shame for the non-league clubs. Should they have been in that position after 90 minutes, that they wouldn't be getting a replay.
Yeah, it's been an odd week, as well. We're speaking on Thursday afternoon. We still don't know really what's going to happen next week in respect of our lives, really, I suppose. One notable story on the managerial merry-go-round, a return to the dugouts for former East Thurrock United boss and old friend of the show, John Coventry. He's gone in a great way for him, Rovers, in the Isthmian North. Always a difficult time to come into a club as a manager with so many games coming up thick and fast.
Yeah, well, I suppose the alternative way of looking at it is that it's a good chance to sort of hit the ground running, really, and quickly sort of turn things around and get points on the board. But yeah, equally, you know, not a lot of time to work with players and, you know, see what you've got there. And at the same time, you know, you could lose three fixtures very quickly. So yeah, an interesting time to come in. It's not quite the international break. It's kind of the opposite of that, really, isn't it? But yeah, Greg Wakering haven't really sort of got their season going at all in Isthmian North. Tough division, of course, with you know, the likes of Averley and Grays and Canvey Island all going well in there. But yeah, John Coventry, really experienced manager. Obviously, 18 years at East Thurrock, took them into National League South and kept them there forever. And then more recently, he's been working at Averley in Isthmian North. So I think he sort of will know a fair amount about that league now, and of course, you know, he's got vast contacts in the game anyway, but that will stand him in good stead. And yeah, interested to see how he gets on.
Yeah, I'll try and get him back on the show in the coming week. So I say it's an interesting week. I guess it's a very interesting week for you guys at the non-league paper. Christmas Day is on Saturday. So, you know, we haven't quite got to the stage where we have non-league football matches on Christmas Day. So I suppose that's had a bit of an impact on the non-league paper schedule. What can we expect to read in this weekend's paper?
Yeah, it has. That's the way it goes sometimes with with the days. But yeah, we've had a bit of an early print deadline this week, so it's a 32-page paper that's still packed full of the fixtures and fixtures and features across the pyramid. And yeah, there's still loads in there this week. You know, just myself, I've spoken to Risborough Rangers, Tony Russell at Lewis, Pete Wild at Halifax, David Oldfield at Oxford City, Tony Reid going in at Farnham, and also Leamington chairman Jim Scott. And that's just myself. I know my colleagues, Matt and John, we've done similar in terms of speaking to people. So it's a really another packed edition that's will be coming out on Boxing Day and also on the 27th as well. So yeah, if you can get out somewhere, or if you're on your way to a game, if you could pick up a paper, that'd be great, because yeah, lots of effort has gone into this one, like it always is, but yeah, particularly so when even more pages need to be filled.
Yeah, and of course, if you're looking for a last minute Christmas present for someone, you know, a subscription to non-league paper will always be gratefully received. And I've also I'm hoping that a non-league paper calendar is heading my way from one of my member of family. But yeah, there's plenty of memorabilia to keep any non-league fan smiling well into the back of January, if not beyond. David, I'll let you go and put your feet up for a few days before this non-league football calendar sort of it really has an impact on us all. Thanks again for your time this week, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks, Tim. Have a good Christmas.
And that's it for this week. I'm off to hopefully, well, I see a game of football over the next week. That'll be a nice thing to do. Before I leave you and bade you all a happy Christmas, time for one of our regulars to do the same.
Hi. It's Phil Annetts here, the founder of FA Cup Fact File. I'd like to wish everyone who loves non-league football and FA Cup football a very Merry Christmas and a prosperous New Year. And here's an FA Cup fact from my FA Cup 150 book for you to use to amaze your friends on Christmas Day. John Anderson scored for Portsmouth when winning the FA Cup in 1939. A different John Anderson scored for Man United when lifting the FA Cup in 1948. It's the only instance of the same name being used by two different FA Cup final goal scorers. Merry Christmas.
And how about a little bit from the White Hawk fan? The White Hawk Isolators and Dreaming of a White Hawk Christmas. You can catch the full song via YouTube and Bandcamp. Thank you to all of my guests. Thank you for everybody for listening as ever. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Myself there at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L. And you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, Tuning Radio, Castbox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Happy Christmas, one and all. Stay safe. Enjoy your football. Thank you and goodbye.
Jabber Production. JIBBA JABBA.